Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Ohio ranks third in the nation for the number of lead pipes still in service. Health issues related to lead exposure are well documented, with public health officials working over decades to reduce lead poisoning cases. But the work is far from over. In the new state budget, the Republican-led legislature slashed millions of dollars earmarked for lead abatement efforts. Joining us now is State Representative Dontavius Geralds, and for him, the issue is both professional and personal. Welcome back to All Sides, Representative Geralds.
Thank you for having me.
So the two-year budget that just passed in June earmarks $250,000 for lead abatement efforts and funding. Now, in past years, that number was $7.5 million. Mm-hmm. So why the steep cut, millions of dollars cut there?
Well, we fought very hard during the budget process as a member of the Finance Committee to ask this question and to really bring home the fact that lead in Ohio is still an important issue that we should be investing in. And my Republican colleagues say that it's mismanaged. We really don't see the outcomes. Is it really impacting the people that it's supposed to be touching? And so they reduced it to $250,000 and then said, well, we're going to go ahead and put more money in the tax lead abatement tax credit. But the truth is, when we think about the actual dollars that went out to communities, it did make a difference. When you think about what the director of health said about lead in Ohio, like those monies made a difference in saving lives. And so I think it's a travesty that we saw this cut happen in this budget, because I can literally have my colleagues walk in the same streets I walk in, meet with the same families I talk to, and show them in real time how this money made a difference and it wasn't mismanaged.
Now, they did do what you said, the lead tax abatement, the tax credits for lead abatement efforts. But it's between $10,000 to $40,000. I mean, that's helpful. That's not nothing.
Well, it is nothing. It's not nothing. But what I will tell you is there is a statewide annual cap of those funds. And so it's going to actually reach less households overall. And that's the part of the issue. And when you think about tax credit, what that means is that family or a person will have to upfront the money and then get it back on when their taxes are due. Most families, knowing how much it costs to remediate lead lines, simply can't afford the upfront cost. And so what we're saying is for those who are really poor, who are living in these 1960 and older homes with lead, guess what? We have no support for you.
The Ohio EPA provided a lengthy statement just before we went on air that summarizes the work that has been done to comply with the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act and to monitor drinking water standards. In the statement, it says the Ohio EPA is working to identify and replace lead lines, providing more than $220 million in grants and zero interest loans, along with technical assistance with the focus on small and disadvantaged communities. The statement cites that the Ohio EPA's Get the Lead Out program is for raising awareness and guiding communities through inspection, treatment, and replacement efforts. So, Representative Geralds, how do you assess the work of the Ohio EPA? How have they done with this project?
I think the reality is, and I think the Ohio EPA is doing all that they can do to try and move money into communities. But the truth is, when we're dealing with 745,000 lead service lines, and by the way, for the audience that's listening, that's just lead lines. We're not talking about the dust particles, the lead chip paint, all in someone's home. If you're dealing with the scale of the issue, $245 million is not enough to address all of the need that is necessary in our communities, right? When I can point you to a place like Cleveland, which has some of the highest levels of lead poisoning for children across this country. The reality is there are places in Ohio that are just as bad drinking water as Flint, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And so while I am commending what EPA has done, the truth is we as a state have to take ownership of this problem and invest billions of dollars in infrastructure, because that's what it really is. It's an infrastructure issue.
Now, the Ohio EPA, in their statement, they also mentioned that they have access to federal funding. So they can, I don't know if they apply for that or it's given to them. That's unclear to me. But what the federal funding for the Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Project does continue. The administration did propose cuts to the program, but they left it the same. So there is federal funding for these programs. Mm-hmm. So what do you say about federal funding versus state funding? Who should be paying for this?
Well, the reality is we all should be paying for this. I think that there should be a blended number of funds from the federal government, from the state government, all working to address this issue. These are Ohioans that we're talking about. And every single day, I have talked to residents, mothers who are pleading and begging to hopefully get a front of the line to address the lead remediation in our homes. And the truth is, we have a part to play as a General Assembly on this issue. And that's why I introduced my bill. But that bill is only one part of the broader problem of this infrastructure issue. And every time that we are cutting funds, we're essentially cutting out a lifeline for a young child who likely is going to get poisoned because we're not investing in that community. And that is the problem.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about a big reduction in funding at the state level for lead abatement programs with Columbus's Democratic Representative Dontavius Geralds. So you grew up in Cleveland in an older home where there was lead. Can you tell us, how were you impacted?
Well, I try to share my story as one of the only members to ever been elected and have this story of lead poisoning. I want to say I love my mom. Had it not been for my mother, who noticed some signs and symptoms that something was wrong and took me to the doctor when she did, who knows where I would be today. And so when I was a young child, 4 or 5, I had high temperature, fever, sweaty, there was just a lot of physiological issues that were happening to me. We thought it was a fever at first, but my mom said, it's not breaking. His temperature keeps going up. Let's take him to the doctor. And so the doctor ran a number of tests. I was living in a community that had high levels of lead. And so they ran a lead test, thankfully, showed that I had very high exposure. And basically said to my mom that, we're glad you took him to the hospital when you did, because had you not, we don't know if he would have been here. Mm-hmm. And so that led to a whole host of different supports. I had to do speech therapy from first grade to fifth grade to learn how to speak. And, and I still deal with some of the neurological issues, because the truth is, there's no safe level of lead that should exist in any person's body, let alone a young child. And lead poisoning impacts your neurological, your physiological, heart, cardiovascular. I mean, it impacts every part of your body. It even goes into your bones. And so for me, I try to use my story to really shed light on the realities that so many of our young kids face. 4,500 kids in Ohio just last year were exposed to lead. But the truth is that testing, because it's limited, I argue that there are so many more kids that are poisoned and we don't even know about it.
In your case, was it paint or the water lines?
It was paint.
Paint, okay.
Which is primarily the majority of what we're seeing with kids getting poisoned from lead. It's paint chips because of the acetate. It tastes sweet. And so a lot of kids think it's like Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory, pulling paint off the wall, you eat it and it's sweet. Oh, you want to get some more. And so that's the thing. And I feel like that part of it is us educating our communities around the signs, the symptoms, and ultimately what you can do to, when you see lead, to get it out of your home.
The issue is a big issue in Cleveland. That's where you are from. But it's an issue in the rest of the state as well. But the rate of lead poisoning in Cleveland is almost 4 times the national average.
Yes.
It's the highest in all of Ohio's major cities.
Yes.
How do the lead abatement efforts get to the people who need them, in one particular neighborhood in Cleveland or something?
Well, I got to commend, let's say Cleveland. There's a lot of community organizations that work with the municipality to really bring down dollars. And so when, for example, we were submitting and pushing out money from our state programs, when it got to the cities will work with coalitions to identify neighborhoods, zones, and then ultimately disperse those funds directly to those families who are in need. And what we saw, I mean, when there was a bill, when I first became a legislator, I introduced a bill with Representative Tom Patton. And that it led to us pulling down $150 million of ARPA funds to fund the Lead Safe program that the state has now zeroed out. And so part of those funds would work in partnership with those communities to invest in the heaviest areas where lead is present. But the truth is there are communities all across the state that haven't even surveyed their neighborhoods as to whether their lead lines exist underneath their homes or where their homes that have lead present. And so we have a lot of work to do. And it's not like every community, like a community out in Coshocton County, is the same as Cleveland. There's two different realities that we're seeing across the state, and we need to get to a baseline for all families to feel safe related to lead.
So one of the Republicans who led the budget process in the Ohio House, Representative Brian Stewart, was critical of some of these programs. We did invite him to be a guest on the show today or provide a statement, but his office said he was unable to participate. Mm-hmm. But Republicans, in making these budget cuts, they raised concerns about the efficiency of these lead abatement programs and said that money was being mismanaged and it wasn't being used properly. So what is your response to that?
Well, I would say that I would love to take any of my Republican colleagues, and I know a lot of them, I have a lot of great bills with some of them, to Cleveland and other places to meet with some of these communities and say that same thing to their face. And talk to them about what the impact of those dollars meant for families that were saved because of the fact that they found the lead early and their child did not get poisoned. And I will also take them to families that have to deal with the real consequence of lead poisoning and their child maybe is in the criminal justice system now, or maybe didn't reach their potential was robbed from them because of the dust and the water that was, coming into their home. I think oftentimes what I try to do is put a face to the reality. And if it's one thing to say it, it's another thing to say it to their face. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that I've tried my best to use my story so that they could say those types of things to my face. I believe that there's a lot of work to be done. I don't want to diminish that there could be a world where improvements are needed, but to wipe away and eliminate an entire line item just because you believe there's some mismanagement and not replace it with some guardrails or do something different, just wipe it away, that's a travesty for all of us.
You mentioned legislation you had introduced. Do you feel like you can get some money back in if you reintroduce the bill? You were on the show about a year ago talking about it, Ohio's Lead Line Replacement Act, a bipartisan bill.
Yes.
What happened to that back then? And can you reintroduce it? And is that another way to replace this?
Well, absolutely. So when we first came onto the show, Amy, I was just the sole sponsor of that bill, the last GA. And part of that was because I wanted to really do the work to engage my Republican colleagues. This GA, we did reintroduce the Lead Line Replacement Act, and we do have a bipartisan support with my good colleague, Representative Rob Blaisdell. And we had our first hearing, and it went overwhelmingly successful because, again, telling the story, giving real data and facts, talking about the fact that, EPA has already designated that in 10 years we should be removing all lead service lines across Ohio. Mm-hmm. Our bill extends it to 15, but also creates a roadmap to actually begin to address this issue in a real and intentional way. And so we had a great sponsor testimony. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to have more testimony on this and hopefully get this over the finish line, because there should be no lead lines in existence in Ohio. There shouldn't be. But here we are, one of the top states in the country that has lead service lines. And that means that families could be very well right now, audiences listening could be drinking lead tainted water and not know it. And that is not the Ohio that we deserve.
Do you think sometimes it's easier to get things through by their own bill rather than in the giant state budget? So it was easy to cross off a line item in the giant state budget, but maybe you can come at it another way.
Listen, I'm all about all options. Yeah. I've introduced legislation put legislation in the budget that tried to address these issues. I also think that having a bill like the Lead Line Replacement Act brings community into the state house so that we can hear these stories and so that the legislators on both sides of the aisle can ask questions to those who've been impacted. I think that is the most powerful thing we can do in the legislature is actually listen to our constituents and make sure that their lived experience is better because we're in that building in the state house.
And back to the cuts in the money, whenever someone says that it was mismanaged, were they able to provide evidence to you? Like, do you know what they mean by mismanaged money?
I don't, to be quite frank with you. When I heard that the first time, I would ask, like, where did you get this basis? Is this qualitative, quantitative? Like, where you get coming from? Mm-hmm. I don't believe that I haven't seen any evidence. And so, here's the thing I want to say. This issue impacts the poorest of us and some of the most culturally diverse of us. And what I am trying to do is we have to remove away from that those ideas that, oh, this mismanaged money or this issues with the problem. Like, we got to just focus on the problem. The problem's not going to go away. Let's just figure out if you believe it's mismanaged, let's fix it and let's get the money back out. Because if we don't actually fund this issue, kids are going to die. And that is not something that we all want.
Okay. And the Ohio EPA said that replacing these lead lines will continue. The work will continue. They have grant money. They have access to federal money. So I guess we'll just see if it slows down or not, or
well,
how that.
What I hope is, thank you for giving me that statement. We're going to be having a meeting with them to see what money they're talking about so that we can actually connect it to our communities and those communities can tap in and make sure that they get money to address this issue.
All right. We've been talking about cuts in state funding for lead abatement programs with Columbus's Democratic State Representative Dontavious Jarrells. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk with the medical director of the Ohio chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics Lead-Free Ohio program. That is When All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Health issues related to lead exposure are well documented, with thousands of children diagnosed in Ohio each year. Public health officials have worked for decades to reduce lead poisoning cases, but the work is far from over. In the new state budget, the Republican-led legislature slashed millions earmarked for lead abatement efforts. Dr. Rupa Takor is medical director of the Lead-Free Ohio program through Ohio's chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Welcome to All Sides, Dr. Takor.
Thank you for having me. Wonderful to be here.
So we just heard from Representative Dontavious Jarrells, who introduced a bill last year called the Lead Line Replacement Act. When he introduced the bill, he called it a growing crisis of lead poisoning in our state. Can you give us a sense of the scope of the problem? Is lead poisoning a problem or is it a crisis?
I would say it's a crisis. I think that to understand the scope of the lead problem, we need to first have a conversation about where it's coming from. So the vast majority of cases of lead poisoning in Ohio are attributed to lead-based paint that's deteriorating in older homes. Lead paint was banned in 1978, but over two-thirds of Ohio's housing stock was built before that. So kids living in or around those older homes in both urban and rural areas are at risk. Similarly, Ohio still has more lead pipes than other states, with an estimated 745,000 lead pipes still in use. Lead pipes were banned throughout the nation in public water systems in 1986, but we're still working on replacing those lines. So in 2024, Ohio Department of Health estimated that of the 168,400-ish children that were tested for lead across the state. About 4,500 of them were confirmed to have elevated blood lead levels over 3.5, and another 1,141 had confirmed lead poisoning with blood lead levels over 10. But we actually think the number might be much higher because we know that about 40% of children who are at risk for lead exposure don't get the recommended lead testing. So we're missing a good portion of our at-risk children, which is why the Ohio AAP's Lead Free Ohio program was launched to begin with. So our mission is to educate pediatric healthcare providers across the state and support quality improvement initiatives to reduce the impact of lead exposure on our children.
Now, you mentioned that most lead poisoning cases come from paint, but then we also have to worry about these lead pipes with the water lines. So is it, say you have a house where you know there's no lead paint, everything's been like painted over, sealed up, or been taken care of. What about the water line? How much lead exposure can come from that water line? Does that elevate levels?
It can elevate levels. There are things that can be done to prevent that. For the most part, municipal water lines are considered to be lead safe, but there still might be leaded pipes from the city lines to the home. Mm. And so that's where some of that risk comes in. We will counsel families that they can actually do some water testing to identify if that is a potential source of lead in their home. And for those that are concerned about leaded pipes, they can run their water on cold for a minute or two before they collect it for use for cooking or even just drinking or, you know, mixing formula, whatever it might be, making sure that they kind of clear out what was sitting there in the pipe before they use it for ingestion can help to minimize that risk.
Hmm. Okay. So is this a worry for just children, or can adults have lead poisoning too?
Adults can as well. And sometimes we see behavior issues and things like that. However, most effects that we see happen in kids who have had, you know, childhood lead poisoning. Hmm. And the reason for that is because lead gets inhaled or ingested from the environment, usually from dust from that deteriorating lead paint. Once it gets into the body, it gets absorbed into the blood, and from the blood deposits into various organ systems. In these little ones who are actively playing on the floor, they're doing a lot of hand-to-mouth behaviors. They tend to pick up, and they have those sticky little fingers, right? They tend to pick up that lead dust and ingest it or inhale it a lot more readily than older kids or adults who are living in the same home, just because of the behaviors that they naturally display. And during that, you know, 1 to 2 years of life, the beginning of life, their brain is actively growing. And so when that lead deposits into the brain, it can cause lifelong impairment. That's where we see developmental delays, impaired IQ, things like that. So effects are much greater and much more concerning in childhood lead poisoning.
Yeah, that was my next question. So talking about children, what effects does lead have on the body, the brain? Can you go over some of basically some of the signs and symptoms and then the long-term effects?
Of course. So actually, when kids are acutely poisoned, when they're very small and they're actively ingesting or inhaling that lead dust, many of them don't show any signs that they're being poisoned. So this is why we screen based on risk of exposure rather than on symptoms alone. If they do have any symptoms, usually with very, very high lead levels, they might be something like irritability, general behavior problems, sleep problems, abdominal pain, kind of lethargy or fatigue, loss of appetite, headaches. And in the event of very, very high levels, we might even see seizures. But you can see that those are pretty vague symptoms. They may not immediately be recognized as acute lead toxicity. So that's why we always recommend routine testing at 12 and 24 months to identify the majority of those cases. Long-term or lifelong consequences of childhood lead exposure can include impaired bone and muscle growth, hearing loss, damage to the nervous system, ADHD, developmental delays, decreased IQ. We've also seen some linkage to, criminal activity and, need for public benefits, homelessness, things like that. So we can see that there's a link to other social drivers as well.
Representative Gerrels earlier in the show talked about his he was poisoned. He had lead poisoning whenever he was a kid, and he had a really high fever that wouldn't go away. That wasn't one of the symptoms you mentioned. So do you think that when they took him in and tested him for lead, he tested positive, but maybe just the fever got him in the right place at the right time?
That's definitely a possibility. And we're still learning more and more about how lead presents, what the outcomes are as they correlate to specific lead levels and things like that. So, I think it's most likely that the fever got him in the right place at the right time, but we're still learning more.
Ohio law requires blood testing for lead at 12 and 24 months if a child is insured by Medicaid or if they live in a high-risk zip code. So the Lead Free Ohio website says only 50% of children meeting those criteria are tested. Why so low? Why can't we get this test to everyone?
I think there are a couple factors there. One is we know that there is a lot of mistrust and distrust with the medical community. And so there are some folks who just don't have a strong medical home. They don't have access to testing. There are other folks who there are competing priorities on their time and their resources. And so getting to preventive health care may not be what they're focused on in that moment. And so often it's more of a reactive approach. Another factor might be, you know, we have some stigma maybe associated with lead poisoning, that this is a racial problem. It's a poverty level problem. Folks may not feel that this is something that may affect them or their child. And so sometimes the lead test is declined even when it's offered. So we see that there are a lot of different factors that go into a family's decision. Our hope, though, is that with some of the training that we're providing through the Ohio AAP's Lead Free Ohio program, that healthcare providers are offering that testing more consistently, that we're doing a better job of screening patients and testing the ones that are at risk.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about cuts in funding for lead abatement programs with Dr. Rupa Takor, medical director of the Lead Free Ohio program. It's a part of the Ohio chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. So let's talk about that funding piece. Under previous state budgets, millions were earmarked for lead abatement. How is Lead Free Ohio, your group, how is it funded?
So we have had contracts with the Ohio Department of Health to fund the majority of our work.
Do you know if this cut from $7.5 million down to just $250,000 in the current state budget, will that impact you?
It has. Our funding is a little bit more limited than it has been in previous years, but we're still hoping to continue a lot of the good work that we've been doing.
There is federal money related to this, too, because the Ohio EPA was saying that they get money from the state and from the federal government. Does Lead Free Ohio have any involvement in federal money?
We don't at this time. We are looking at opportunities, though.
So Republican Representative Brian Stewart led the House's budget efforts, and he told the Columbus Dispatch that millions of federal, state, and local dollars have already been spent to address lead poisoning, and Republicans have also mentioned inefficiencies or abuses with lead abatement programs. How would you answer that?
I think it's really hard to talk about or evaluate program efficiency when you're dealing with such a pervasive and sticky problem. We know that lead is already in over 2/3 of our homes. In order to completely eliminate it, we would need to raise those structures to the ground using appropriate containment methods to prevent lead dust from being released in the construction process and escaping into the environment. And then we would need to rebuild those structures from the foundation up using lead-free materials. So that's what making a home lead-free would look like. Mm. And it's clearly very resource intensive. There's a lot of money, time, and labor that would need to go into making every at-risk home in Ohio lead-free. So the alternative is lead safe, where we continually work to contain the lead that's already in our homes. And that can include repainting frequently so that any chipping or deteriorating paint gets sealed back up. It can include frequent damp dusting or mopping to remove that lead-contaminated dust from the home. So that's a much less costly and quicker way to address lead hazards, and typically will allow families to stay put rather than evacuating the home for an undefined period of time while that reconstruction would take place. So lead safe measures are often preferred when local health departments or property owners are trying to allocate their very limited resources. But this would require constant monitoring and work to keep those lead hazards controlled and contained. So when there's a break in that monitoring or upkeep, that home may no longer be lead safe and now poses a risk to the children who live there again. So it's kind of a never-ending effort to keep homes lead safe when you have limited resources or limited funding. And now, of course, we have less funding for that work than we did before.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Let's talk about restoring the funding a little bit, because restoring lead funding is among the top priorities listed on the American Academy of Pediatrics Ohio chapter website. How do you plan to advocate to try to get this money restored at the state level?
Yeah, so the Ohio AAP will continue to work with our partners in advocacy to see if there are avenues to restore funding or assist communities in applying for funds as needed. We have strong partnerships with the Ohio Lead Free Kids Coalition and Ohio Healthy Homes Network, who have been very active in legislative advocacy and worked really hard to maintain funding for lead abatement this last year. And when budget season comes back around, we're going to work with those partners again as we have in the past. But in the meantime, we're continuing to advocate for quality improvement in lead screening and testing, as well as education for the families of those at-risk children.
You also host informational webinars about the dangers of lead poisoning, and your site your site mentions new medical management guidelines from the Ohio Department of Health as well. Can you talk about, first of all, talk about these informational webinars? Do you have any coming up for if anyone wants to learn more?
Absolutely. So we typically host one or two webinars per year, if not more, when we have topics to discuss. Some of them are general information for healthcare providers, and that can include physicians, advanced practice providers, as well as community health workers, health department officials, things like that. And so we provide general education on what lead is, what its effects are, why testing is important, what the medical management guidelines are. We also will hold webinars talking about specific topics that are related to lead poisoning. So for example, this past year, we talked about the intersection of food insecurity and lead poisoning. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the intersection of immigration or refugee status and lead poisoning, just so that folks are aware of when they have families that come into their offices that may screen positive for food insecurity, or we may know that they're refugees, that these kids are at increased risk and they have some special considerations to think about. In addition to that, we have a toolkit on our website that providers as well as families can use just to learn more about lead poisoning, what they can do, and what resources are available to them. We also have a practice coaching program, which is where we do some hands-on quality improvement jump starts, essentially, for practices across the state who want to improve lead testing, either thinking about how they're doing the lead testing, what method they're using, thinking about their office workflows, thinking about how they educate families or how they outreach to the community. So we're doing that practice coaching program again this year as well.
So now that you've had this state funding cut, millions of dollars eliminated from lead abatement efforts, are you going to have to reduce any of those programs? I mean, how is this going to impact your on-the-ground efforts?
We're still doing education as we always have in the webinars and our toolkits. We're making updates to those all the time. Our practice coaching program has scaled down a little bit. So last year we included over 50 practices. This year we're looking at closer to 20 to 25. So we've scaled down a little bit, but we're still moving ahead.
If someone tests positive, if someone does the test at 12 months or 24 months and their kid tests positive for lead, what happens? Does like the doctor hand them a pamphlet and say, is it a pamphlet from you? Do they call you? Like what happens?
Yeah. So actually any healthcare entity that does lead testing in the state is required by law to report those results to the Ohio Department of Health. Elevated results get reported from ODH to the local health department. So this is actually probably an area of ongoing improvement, just how the public health department and the medical home interact with each other and communicate back results and where that family is in the stage of remediating their home. But it's typically the local health department that will do a home inspection for lead hazards and make recommendations for what remediation needs to happen on the home. And then our job as the healthcare provider is to repeat testing to ensure that the lead level's coming back down as we expect it to.
Okay, so if someone lives in Columbus and their kid takes the test positive for lead, then Columbus Public Health knows about it.
Correct.
Okay, and then someone from Columbus Public Health comes to their house, and
correct.
And then where does the funding piece come in? So that Columbus Public Health tells that family, you can apply for help with this, with you or where, or not with you.
yeah. So. One of the line items that was cut from the budget was the Lead Safe Home Fund program, which was zeroed out essentially in this budget, previously received $1 million each year. So that Lead Safe Home Fund provided support to local health departments to investigate the sources of lead in a child's environment, to prevent future lead exposure, to offset fees for lead abatement workers, and to educate the public in general about the dangers of lead poisoning. So there is concern from Ohio Department of Health, from us at the Ohio AAP, and from providers across the state that losing that funding will put more of Ohio's children at risk for lead exposure and sequelae, because we know that just that workforce to do the investigations and to do the remediation work will be very short-staffed.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there, but good luck with your programs and with your advocacy for increased funding. We've been talking with Rupa Takur, Medical Director of the Lead-Free Ohio Program from the Ohio Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk about what happens to children when they have elevated lead levels and how is it treated. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour about lead and how ingesting any amount of it is unsafe. Health issues related to lead exposure are well documented, with thousands of children diagnosed in Ohio each year. In the new state budget, the Republican-led legislature slashed millions of dollars earmarked for lead abatement efforts. The Akron Children's Hospital Lead Clinic treats patients with elevated lead levels. Martha Blackford serves as a clinical pharmacologist and toxicologist at the Lead Clinic. Welcome to All Sides, Martha.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Can you give us a sense of the day-to-day work happening at your clinic? How many patients do you see in a given week with lead exposure?
So with our clinic, a lot of what we're doing is we're helping to provide recommendations with providers and work with the families. Right now, you know, we're probably in contact with at least over 150 patients that have had elevated lead levels and then seen some of the patients within our clinic.
Do you get referrals from around the state, or are there clinics like yours throughout the state, or are you kind of one of a kind?
There are not many clinics just like this across the state. Akron Children serves a wide region, and so we do have referrals from, you know, across our organization over multiple counties. And then sometimes we do have referrals from across the state. It depends on where patients are located, what services are available there, and what their providers would need.
What's the trend line been over the last few years? Have you seen an increase? Have things been steady? Tell me about, like, is it an increasing problem?
Yeah, so I've been working with our lead clinic since 2000, or I've been the co-director since 2014, and you know, we're continuing to see patients with these elevated lead levels. And, you know, even over the past few years, even though this has been an ongoing problem, we are seeing more, you know, having referrals for more and more kids who have these elevated lead levels. And then also looking at, you know, once the lead level has reached over as 45 or higher, then those patients are needing medications to help remove the lead, and we have been treating more of those patients with a chelator.
Do you think that this is because there's more problems with lead, or is it that there's more lead testing? So kids are being tested more frequently, and so then we know about it.
It's likely a combination of both. We have been increasing, you know, children are with a screening and getting that testing done, because a lot of families with children who have had lead exposure, they really may not know that their kids have had this exposure. And so the screening is really important to identify those patients. And so that is contributing. And then just with how long, you know, lead issues have been in our state, in the country, that is definitely both are contributing to this.
When you talk to the parents of the kids who test positive, are you finding out that it's mostly lead paint related issues, or is it sometimes the water pipes?
It's usually with the housing itself, and a lot of the times it is with the lead paint, the lead pipes, and that water source can be an issue too. But anybody who's living in a house that's, you know, was built before 1978 definitely has that risk for lead exposure. And a lot of the times, you know, it could be the paint, it could be around the windows, doors. There's lots of areas that the families are, you know, just, it's not obvious that that's where the lead's coming from until they realize that their child has a high lead level.
We're doing this show today because the state cut millions of dollars from the state budget related to lead abatement efforts. Does your clinic receive state funding?
We do not receive state funding. This is through the hospital, but we're always, you know, open to engaging with policymakers and help ways to make our kids and communities healthier.
So what do you think of the fact that it's been said by some members of the legislature that these lead abatement programs are spending too much money? They were talking about inefficiencies and just problems with the money, so they ended up cutting it. What's your reaction to that?
You know, just knowing that, you know, lead has been an ongoing problem, and just seeing how our families are, you know, impacted by the effects of lead, and knowing that, you know, once they have the home inspections completed and then waiting for the abatement, that can still, it can take time. And so, you know, we're trying to help support our families as best we can until that lead abatement occurs, and, you know, anything that can be done to help support these families, and just with the removal of lead and the lead abatement, you know, we'll be supportive of. So, you know, we're just seeing the effects that the lead exposure and just the process that some of these families, they want to do the right thing for their children and minimize the exposure. And then they are, you know, it can take a while for that all to occur.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about why lead is a complicated problem to solve with Martha Blackford with Akron Children's Hospital's Lead Clinic. So when lead is detected in a home, what steps happen next? Does the family have to leave the home?
The family doesn't have to leave the home. So when the state will do the home inspections, and then they're working with either the homeowner, whether that's the landlord or the family, and what needs to be done from that side for, you know, getting applying for the grants. And it just takes time for all of that to occur. And so in the meantime, you know, we're talking to families about ways that they can try to minimize that lead exposure in the home until the abatement occurs. You know, sometimes if they have alternative places that they could stay until the lead abatement occurs, we would encourage that. It's just not always an option for some of our families.
So if they do need to stay in the home, what are some things you tell them to do besides just figuring out the problem areas and keeping the kid away from it?
Yeah, so the things that we go over with the family, you know, wiping down surfaces, especially if they know, like if it's a windows, a certain room, the doorway, trying to wipe down with damp cloths those areas, and, you know, vacuuming or sweeping frequently. Hand washing is really key with the way that kids are exposed to lead. A lot of it's from, you know, they're putting their hands to their mouth, things that they're putting in their mouth. And so frequent hand washing is really important. Other things that we'll talk to them about, will be, you know, leaving shoes at the door. So that way, you know, if there's some source of lead on the outside of the home, it's not getting, you know, they're not tracking that through their house, and trying to just minimize, you know, watch what the kids are putting in their mouth or keeping them out of certain rooms if they know that that's the issue.
What could the lead source be outside of the home that's on your shoes?
Some of that could be from exterior paint or porches. And a lot of that would be from some either lead source from the home or just from the environment in the dirt if they have bare soil around.
Mm, okay. Can you talk about how the socioeconomic factors play a role here? Low-income families have fewer options for A, moving to a different home, or B, getting help with repainting their entire home or dealing with new windows or something like that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of factors with that. And, you know, a lot of our families are renting, some are the homeowners. And with our clinic, though, we do have a multidisciplinary approach. And so part of our team, we do work with our social work department and also with community legal aid to help work with those families and get them connected if they would need that type of resource for that, to help support them with what's happening, you know, with their home part. The clinic, we're helping to support the, you know, the healthcare side of things, but also get them connected to resources that can help them in other ways.
Are you worried now that some of those resources might be harder to find if there's been cuts at state in state funding?
Yes, that is, you know, any cuts are always going to be a concern, and we're just trying to continue to work with our families and see what we can offer and provide from that aspect, and try the best we can to support them during this time, because it can take a long time for, you know, even once the source is removed, for lead to leave the child's body.
That, yeah, I wanted to talk about the therapy used to deal with the lead poisoning. Is it chelation therapy? Am I saying that right?
Yes, chelation therapy.
Chelation
yes.
therapy. Can you tell me what that is?
Yeah, so chelation therapy, it's when a medication is used to bind a metal. So in this case, it would be lead. And we're using that when kids' levels are 45 or higher. And there's a couple different kinds of chelators that are available. One is an oral form and that called Sexamer, and that's what we're using primarily with our patients.
Okay, so is this the best treatment? Is it the only treatment?
Yeah, there's the other medication. It's an IV form, and looking at how high a kid's lead level is, that those are the two main forms, and the oral Sexamer is, you know, easier for the family since that doesn't require an inpatient stay. It's looking at, typically it's going to be a 19-day course for the patient. Mm-hmm. And so they can do that outpatient, and then we continue to follow them. And sometimes kids may need to have multiple courses of that depending on how high their lead level is.
So if the level is lower, can sometimes just removing or like stopping the exposure, can the body work it out on its own? Or if you test positive for lead, do you need treatment no matter what?
Yeah. So, you know, with the lead, your body, once you eliminate the source, your body does start eliminating lead. And the reason that we're treating at the higher levels is as lead levels increase, and that can have more significant symptoms develop with effects on the brain and, you know, change in mental status. And so that's where the medications are being used at those higher levels. When it's below 45, we're trying to eliminate the source and then help, you know, just allow the body to clear it as it normally processes it. It just can take a long time because it does get stored in different parts of your body, such as it can build up in your bone. And so that's why lead, it can be a long-term problem for families even after the source is removed.
Mm. For people listening and wondering about their lead exposure, wondering about their old home right now, where can they turn? What tests can they do?
So if they have children who are under the age of 6, I would encourage them to talk to their pediatrician to see if they have had a lead level checked, or if not, if that is something that they can do. For testing, there are different test kits available if they are concerned about a particular area in their home. But I would also encourage them to either talk to their pediatrician or their health department. They may be able to have a lead inspection done if, you know, that they're paying for. But if their kids are testing positive with higher levels of lead, then they do have the state does the health and the home inspections for that.
If your home does test positive for lead, you know, if you do one of those tests just on something in your home, does that necessarily mean that your kid automatically is lead poisoned, or it's not? Is there a line there?
Yeah, no. So that would tell you that there's lead source in your home, and then you would want to have that conversation with your pediatrician to see if your child should be tested, or you could have your child tested to see what their actual risk is.
All right. I want to thank you for your time. We've been talking with Martha Blackford, who serves as a clinical pharmacologist and toxicologist at the Lead Clinic at Akron Children's Hospital. Martha, thank you for your time today.
All right. Thank you.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.